All right. That was Hugh Ramopolo Masekela with 10 Minutes Older, The Trumpet. This was a special project that he undertook. Masekela, as you may recall, was a trumpeter, a flugelhornist, a cornetist, singer and composer, and one of the pioneers of modern jazz in South Africa. He died in Johannesburg on January the 23rd, 2018, at the age of 79. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we pick up from where we left off with each other yesterday. And it is a particularly important follow-up, I think, because we did not have a chance, we did not have the time to continue the conversation, because the speech that we heard yesterday went for the whole hour. I'm not complaining, not at all. So let's talk about the speech that we heard yesterday. We shared a riveting keynote speech by civil rights activist, the Reverend Dr. William Barber II, at what was called an emergency convening in Washington, D.C., of the Congressional Black Caucus and many of its partnering organizations. For Barber, this speech was, quote, a call to action, unquote, especially to Black leadership to realize the full potential of Black political power while forging working coalitions with other communities to maximize independent power. Current conditions, he said, demand this kind of a response. Needless to say, what he laid out as a call to action was a tall order. But does that mean that Barber's call to action is implausible? That's what we're going to be talking about today. What is, in fact, going to be the strategy? Is it possible to ramp up in the short time before the presidential election, the general election? Is there enough time to mount such a campaign? Could it be done? What has to happen, do you think, for that to be done? Do you get the sense that Barber's view about coalition power and the emergency of the situation demands an all-hands-on-board approach and intense effort delivered on just that, focusing on just that, building coalitions, political coalitions that could stand up to Trump in particular, to the Republicans generally, but to build at all levels, as he enumerated it, something of a working coalition, amassing its power rather than going the way we've been going, which is, in fact, dissipating our power. That's the question I ask you today. I should say those are the questions I ask you today. It's not just one question. But I'd like to hear your thoughts about that. Because we have already begun, it seems to me, the traditional trip down the yellow brick road, following the same tired patterns that we have followed for decades, and that is obeying the dictates of the Democratic Party without any assurances that we would share in the goodies. Not at all. We don't share in the goodies, it seems. And everybody holds up the example of, well, you have the candidacy of Barack Obama, so what are you beefing about? He was a black candidate, and he seemed to have captured the power, at least enough power, to land in the White House. So what is your point? What is your case? Ed from Queens, what do you think about that? What do you think about Dr. Barber's points?
Well, Dr. Barber is he's a godsend. He's one of the last, what I would call, true civil rights, politically active people that are on the forefront today. I believe, you know, his speech was inspiring. I first heard it initially when he started his Moral Mondays project and coming out on Mondays and protesting certain things that were going on in his district, I believe in South Carolina, if I'm not mistaken. But as far as to your question for coalition building, it's something that is happening now. I mean, it's not just for the election. It's got to be a consistent basis. It's got to be constant. You know, you got to agitate and organize on a constant basis. And that's what it's coming to. People are realizing now that we've far too long been in this politics of personality and power, and we've got these self-contained groups of people outside of inside the Washington bubble who don't really realize what the public needs or wants as far as medical rights, as far as the abolition of poverty, as far as economic justice, as far as social justice. And it's happening on a smaller scale, and I believe that's how everything happens in this country. You only need about 5 to 10% of the general populace in this country to actually infuse a movement. And it's happening. It's a slow process, though, because nothing happens in a vacuum, and it took time to get this way. It's going to take time for people to educate themselves and realize that this process has nothing for the common man. This process is for rich folks by rich folks. And that's starting to become understandable. And the Reverend is a definite leader on that forefront.
Do you believe we have the benefit of time on our side?
Well, I mean, we have nothing but time. I mean, for this election, I don't think there's going to be any type of real movement towards true economic and social justice. I mean, Bernie Sanders is the best bet, and he's compromised, to say the least. I mean, he's compromised, to say the least, by virtue of him being part of the system. The movement's going to come from outside of the system. It's going to be like a Tea Party type of thing. It's going to be like a grassroots movement. I predict it'll start locally and build and progress. People are going to have to get rid of the old ideas and the old concepts of movement building. We're going to have to overcome internal prejudices, homophobia, racism, religious classism. And just realize that the commonality is we all want a better quality of life. And if we all strive, we'll all gain it. And that's not just hyperbole. It's the truth. We all got common needs. We all got common wants. And we've got to unite around those and present a force. And I believe it's going to happen. It's going to take time. It might not happen in my lifetime, but it's definitely in its genesis now.
Well, this is his point. If all conditions suggest that this is the right time, because so much time already has been wasted, this is probably a last-ditch effort in that sense of putting together coalitions that can tackle the myriad problems we know we will face with a Republican or Trump administration. If it doesn't happen now, it probably would not happen anytime soon, because the impetus is there, the reasons are there, staring us in the face as to why it is imperative to move in a different way politically, away from the standard, we're all Democrats, we all going to vote for the Democratic Party, and we're going to win, this kind of stuff. Is there time to initiate a new approach to building political power?
Well, I mean, like I said, the initiative is out there. As far as the time, this system is far too corrupt to have any true initiative. I mean, we at best we get compromises with the powers that be. Is there time to develop a movement like the Reverend speaks about, and to attack the problems that we have in this time frame in this election? No, I don't think so. I think it's got to be a consistent effort, an effort in education, an effort in organizing, and I think it's got to look beyond the elections, beyond the personalities that are in place now. There's got to be some foundation, like Democratic Party, Republican Party used to have platforms, used to have ideas, gun control, social justice, elimination of poverty. Those things got to be instituted, and then we have to use those demands, those platforms, to augment a candidate or to augment a group of candidates to fulfill our needs. That's what's missing. Politics has turned into personalities. I mean, you spoke about Obama. His campaign was nothing but the cult of personality. And his organizational apparatus came out of his personality, because once his terms were finished, the apparatus died. And that's the problem. The person, the apparatus, the idea, the policies have to be larger than the people that represent them. And if they do fall beyond the wayside, such as men and women do, the policies have to maintain and remain. And that's what's missing in politics today, in my opinion.
If I extend your argument, I would have to prepare myself, because you still do need some kind of personage to rally around. I think you just said that it really is a better idea to wait this election out, but to start organizing, but not necessarily endorsing or voting for whoever emerges within the ranks of the Democratic Party as the candidate.
I mean, my opinion, if Bernie Sanders emerges as the candidate, I'll consider voting for him, because as far as I'm concerned, he's the lesser of the most evils that are out there. I mean, that's the
lesser
bottom line.
He's
the lesser of the evils that are out there. But in the future, I mean, we've got to start to develop movements that are based on principles rather than personalities. We've got to start to develop an agenda to say, look, if you want to get elected, here's what we need. Do you stand for this stuff? What are you willing to do to get us this stuff? I don't really care if I like you or if I don't like you. If you stand for what I stand for and I can tolerate you morally, then I'll be behind you. But politics is like a business. It's a give and a take. It's the allocation of resources and power where needed. That's what politics is. And if you don't have a vested interest other than I like this person or I like that person or I don't like this person, if you have a vested interest in what this person is representing, pertaining to your life, pertaining to your reality, then you're just wasting your time. You might as well be voting for American Idolists.
Well, thank you so much for getting us started today and on such a strong note. Thanks, Ed. Clara from Philadelphia, you're on the air.
In so early. Hello, everyone. I'm sitting here thinking about what the gentleman said about our need to act soon. And when we talk about the future, you know, letting somebody come into office and see what they'll do, I think it's because our frame of reference is wrong. We're focusing on how to make things better in this system. The system is so toxic and dangerous that there's nothing we can do to make it better. We have to focus on developing a new system, the system that really has to begin in our minds. If people could understand, we are at war, they are at war with us. Every day they're developing secret, toxic and secret ways of destroying us. If we could get that in mind, that we are the victims of a war effort by the system, not by one party or the other, they are all part of that system. And I think we need to look at ourselves, and I'll tell you what I'm doing, and I could use some help. But what I am doing is I wake up every morning with that in mind, and what I need to do with myself to be stronger, to confront this. And it does, and I've said it before, it does begin with your health. You can't do anything if you're unhealthy. You can't think clearly. You can't move correctly. I'm thinking now about the fact that so many of us are unhealthy. So we can help ourselves while we fight the system. I see myself as a master boycotter, although I still rely on Amazon. I'll admit that. It's hard for me to get out sometime in the winter to do my shopping. But anyway, I am boycotting the medical establishment. And you can't do that immediately. You start learning how to take care of yourself. You go back to a doctor, he does nothing. Then you go and find how you can do it. You learn how to deny their call for further tests that are not necessary. You go to the doctors on the internet who are very, some of them are very clear and very helpful. Some of them teach you how to take care of yourself. And if you get to the point where you can do that, you can feel that you can take on just about anything. Because if you can take care of your health without these doctors, you can do all kinds of things. The thing is, the boycott, that's the thing, boycotting anything we can boycott. Like if your child is in a school like they are here where there's asbestos and they send that child to another school, you say no. This is our school.
Your point is well taken, but we still have to deal with the raw business of how politics is practiced on a day-to-day basis.
We don't vote.
So we should stop voting rather than continuing to vote and forming coalitions.
Oh, we form coalitions,
present
but we don't
new
have to
candidates.
Oh, yes. But don't vote in the meantime. Yes, we have to. You have to have a. I'm saying that the mindset could make it possible for us to actually do that, to organize and develop new candidates. But in the meantime, there are many other things that we can do because those candidates would be talking about things that apply to us and are important to us. And as we do that, we're developing a new system. I mean, the school system. We work on our local school systems. We work on the way we use use medical assistance by forming groups of people who can help us as natural health providers, that kind of thing. We stop buying these awful things, this bad food, and start our gardens. Like in my block, I've put food in my front yard, and other people are beginning to do that. And I think other people have mentioned this. Go block by block, talking to people. There's a block leader here who does a major party in August with a big it's one of those big toys that sits in the middle of the street, and it goes around and around, and it really cuts people off. And some children go there and ride this, I think it's called a carousel. But we wouldn't have that. We would not have anything that. We're going to have people talking to one another. That kind of thing. Start in your block, but practice personally of getting your health in order and with extreme discipline. And then that'll translate into things outside your home. And some people say, oh, you can do it, you're home. Look, if you stop watching that 3.5-hour TV, you can do all of this. And you can be teaching.
You put some additional ideas on the table for us to consider. Thank you so much for calling in today and contributing. Ma'at from New York. Did you hear the speech by Dr. Barbara, by the way?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And
what
do you think
is applicable? Is it plausible to take his advice and concentrate on building coalitions where possible to maximize political power?
Yes, in many ways. And let me also say about Dr. Barbara, I think he falls into a class of his own in this respect. I think Glenn Ford says it best when he addresses the misleadership of the many of the so-called black leaders, without calling any names right now. But one thing about Dr. Barbara is he is morally centered and someone that deals with integrity, and his ideas are moving in the right direction. What I would say, though, and in reference to hearing Clara and some of the first caller, is that, yes, we need to realize that this system as it is, I mean, I keep saying statelessness as a form of grace. This system, from every direction we look at, and the current direction is 50-plus years that we roll back just under this one administration and personality cult, I must say. And so I think we need to realize how dire things are and come up with different models. Who was that, Jay or Ed, in the first caller?
Ed.
I think he would say, I was in the middle of something, so I didn't catch it all, but I think he was going in that direction. Clara was making similar points, and to me, it's in my DNA to back away from the conventional medical system and versus going a holistic route. But I think we need to actually... We must analyze it, as David said yesterday, and then do what we can do on local, state, and national levels, absolutely. But we must come up with models of how we would be a part of some system that we are powerless to affect or be a part of right now.
Well, there's nothing new in what you've said. The question is, why are we taking so long to get the basics done, even when it is so clear that we have no other choice?
Well, you, Therese, I think many of us were taken aback in terms of after Obama, the in-your-face, as he defined himself in October 18, saying, I'm a nationalist in the Oval Office. I'm a nationalist on the lawn. So since he has status of being a white guy, he declared himself a white nationalist and cozies up and incites violence and gives cover for white supremacy. So I think many of us were stunned by that. You know, sort of blindsided by that. But we must move forward. And I think Reverend Barbara is moving in some right directions with integrity. But part of the problem is these coalitions he's talking about in terms of waking up poor whites, that's a bit problematic because Trump and his cohorts have created, and they're exuberant in the divides and divide in this country right now. So I'm not so sure that that can be as effective as we would like in terms of woke up poor and a struggling middle class whites, so-called whites.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for your opinion and contribution today, Ma'at. Really appreciate it. Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you today?
Okay, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
I'm glad.
Did you hear the speech yesterday?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that was great that you gave voice to Reverend Dr. Barber. Apparently, a lot of people hadn't been following him and his Poor People's Campaign. And in my mind, this is slightly tangential, but in my mind, he was instrumental in having the North Carolina Supreme Court make that decision where the gerrymandering was surgically, it was done with surgical precision in a racial manner, where they had to redistrict the state. And that, I think that ties in with some of the previous callers talking about maybe what has to happen is that we do need to work locally. And I say that because the evildoers, and I mean evil when I say evil, they understand the system. And what they did is start locally because they started taking over the state houses. And when you take over a state house and you get the legislatures of that state, you really gain a lot of power. And when you do that nationwide, it really gives you a lot of power. And this is how the Tea Party really got off the ground. And so that's kind of where we need to start. Building coalitions, I know that's nothing new, as you just said, and I'm glad you said that, and that's true. But the thing is that the people that we are fighting against, they are not letting up. As you say, they are in our face with this now.
So what is to happen? So let us use as a focal point, because I think it is, the upcoming election, general election. Do we expect nothing to happen? Or is there a possibility that something could happen, and if so, what would it look like?
I think what's going to happen is Trump is going to be reelected, only because of a few reasons. He's an incumbent. The system is working for him at this point. There is meddling from foreign entities and other entities. And we still have the Republicans in the Senate still refuse to fund keeping our elections clean, even though it's been established that they're being meddled with. In other words, they don't want to appropriate any more funds. Well, they don't appropriate, but they refuse to sign off on funds for security, election security. But in the meantime, see, we have to do what they did, and we have to start at the bottom. We need to maintain the House and attempt to take back the Senate. and in between get the message out, because these people are absolute, this three-person triumvirate, right? Trump, Bill Barr, and Mitch McConnell, they're working the system. They are working the system for all it's worth, and they understand how to work the system. And this is beyond using parliamentary procedure. They've just muscled in. This has absolutely been a coup. Because I really get irritated when I hear these people who make millions of dollars a year, and I don't know if they're ignorant or they just knowingly lie, when they say, well, Bill Barr, he was such an upstanding individual. No, he wasn't. I'm old enough to remember the crack cocaine scourge. I'm old enough to remember Iran-Contra. And I'm old enough to remember what Bill Barr did to let those people off. We're in trouble.
But still, we have to confront the question. What is to become of the quest for political power by people of color in this country?
Well, we have to understand that the system is fully entrenched now. They've got, this is a white supremacy 2.1. And I don't mean that to try to fan flames of racial tension, but this is what it is. We've had three attorney generals that have made it clear that they're not interested in getting involved when people say blood and soil, Jews will not replace us, and it didn't faze them. That's a red flag. So every one of them, and every one of them has been a criminal. Every one of them lied during their Senate confirmation hearing. That goes for Whitaker. That goes for that Saltine Sessions from Alabama. And that goes for Bill Barr. When Bill Barr was asked about foreign influence, he had to hesitate. He couldn't just say, no, I'm against foreign influence in our elections. He couldn't say that. So we need to understand that we are up against the wall at this point. There's no going back.
Well, we know that we're up against the wall. The people are up against the wall. The question is, what are they going to do? What are we going to do?
Well, I have to go back to my old standby in the Party for Self-Defense. Because they were so good till the government had to emulate some of the programs that the Party for Self-Defense implemented. And that may be what it takes. And see, this can work hand in hand with what Ma'at was saying. Community gardens. You get nice fresh food. You know, once you pick a vegetable, it starts to lose its vitamin content immediately. But if you can pick something and eat it fresh, that's like medicine for your body. I'm not being hyperbolic here, and you can feel it. So, you know, things like that, these community gardens, if you live in the city, let's say like Philadelphia, where there's a lot of abandoned homes in between row homes, and people make a little community garden and share the food, and then maybe use that for an after-school program. You know, there's still grant money out there for after-school programs, and use the fresh fruits and vegetables for the kids. But
yes, we're talking about raw political power here. What you're saying, what Clara had suggested, these are very good ideas. As good as my broom brigade idea of keeping your block clean. But it comes down to the business of who can make things work in the community's interests and within the governmental system where money is available and power, therefore, can be leveraged to get that kind of money. We still have the matter of what do we do about rebuilding, I should say, a new reconstruction having to do with power. political power, raw power.
On that level, and I'm going to attempt to answer your question succinctly now. For right now, we can write that off on the federal level. There is no one on the federal level. In other words, if you vote for a presidential candidate, that's not going to matter. I mean, you can vote out of a posture of self-defense like I will be doing. But whoever is in power, anything they do has to go through all the rigmarole of the way our system is set up. So we can't expect much. You can have all the ideas you want, but it has to go through the House and it has to go through the Senate. And that's exactly why we need to focus locally until we get a critical mass. You know, it starts neighborhood, then it's by city, then it's by state. And it may take a few years, but I'm not going to be Pollyanna about this. We are for right now that we have no political power, and we were not going to for a number of years because the courts have been packed with people who don't even have any experience in trials, but they're very right wing, and that's why they're there.
Thanks, Khalil, for your point of view today. Really appreciate your call. Moki from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Greetings, Utrice.
Thank you. Same to you.
Thanks.
How's it going?
I have to say that the Reverend Barber's speech brought me to tears more than a couple of times. I believe every word he said was divinely inspired. And he's talking about a movement. Clara's ideas are brilliant. This new coalition, I'm going to suggest that the models for this new movement should be derived from the teachings of Dr. Rudolf Steiner on the topics of education, farming, and economics. I believe that this new movement should use Gary Null's approach to health and nutrition. Dr. Steiner was the inventor of biodynamic farming. And, of course, the educational model that's called the Waldorf educational system. So there was a movement in the 19th century, I believe. I tried to look at a little bit more of it up, but I couldn't while I was waiting to speak to you and the community. This movement was called the Chautauqua Movement. And there's a vestige of it somewhere upstate New York. There's a community there. I believe that this movement needs to be steeped in the living word. But after saying that, I suggest that we, you know, this movement needs a good name. And I'm going to suggest the name, the new hashtag, New Chautauquans. That's spelled C-H-A-U, T like Tom, A-U, Q-U-A. So if anyone wants to research the Chautauqua movement in the 19th century, and a good idea needs a good hashtag, needs a good name.
But so before we get to the creative end of it, of deciding what to call a thing, what is this thing going to do? From your perspective.
This thing is all the things that the Reverend Barber said, and including the suggestions that Clara made, community, gardening, et cetera. But, you know, we need to revamp the whole system. And so we have to look to previous models that have suggested the direction we should head in. So that's basically my call, is to just... apprise people of the fact that the movement does need a good name, and this coalition has to be gathered under one banner in order to move forward. So I suggest hashtag New Chautauquans.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Yeah, good day, Utrice.
Hello.
Yes. I have some things that I want to articulate in terms of what we should do. But before I do that, I want to say something about his speech. He started with a prayer. And after he started with a prayer, somewhere in his speech, he said, black people need to get over their homophobia.
Homophobia, yes.
I don't know what he meant by that. And I don't know if it was a plug for the,
in his view,
I don't know if it was a plug for the gay agenda and why I wanted to clarify that.
Oh, please.
The man has
been in the religious community for so many years. You know what he's saying. He says black people need to get over their homophobia.
I don't have a homophobia. I mean, I disagree with homosexuality.
You know, he is speaking generally. It's not targeting you.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I didn't see how that belonged to the speech. I just wanted, you see, if we're going to dissect the speech, we're going to have to dissect everything. You know? But anyway, let me say what I want to say in terms of this. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
First of all, we have to define what is the purpose of, and after we define what is the purpose of government for the people, then we must enumerate a mandate, and this mandate must be the thing on which the system will be predicated. And it should be a mandate that says, okay, the people will now be in charge. For example, say if there's a law to be passed, instead of some politician saying, okay, we'll pass this or that, it should be referendums. It should be a system of referendum where everything the people vote on. And if it's a system of referendum, then we don't have to look for a personality. We don't have to look for an Obama, etc. Because when we look for a personality, then they're not defining a system. And therefore, the people get lost into the charm of politicians. So we must define that government is solely for the purpose of doing the business of the people. Government should function just like a hospital. It should attend to all the basic needs of the people. If one person is homeless, then politicians should be homeless. Politicians should not be treated as celebrities, like this thing that they have, you know, where at a certain time of the year, the president and the media meets, and the president makes jokes and all like that. How is that serving the people? So we need to...
Lincoln, let me ask you. What you're outlining is an altruistic system. It may happen, but not now. What would serve as a practical approach between now and whenever your altruistic system begins to take shape?
You see, what you're saying is similar to saying like every year we vote for the lesser of the evil, and you are actually...
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying what you have outlined is somewhat altruistic or ideal. It will not happen. Not in time to confront and solve and serve as an alternative to what we have now. It will not happen in time. So what, in your view, could serve between now and whenever your suggested system begins to take shape?
That you're all having is this: you're focusing on Trump, and Trump is no different from Obama, etc. And you're all focusing on getting rid of Trump, and you're going to keep doing that, and then there's going to be another Obama and another Clinton and another this one and another that one. So I'm saying to you, try to, in the meantime, the best you can do is hold politicians' feet to the fire. Let them be accountable. You can organize the people to say, whenever they do not produce for us, then we will boycott, etc. But at all times, it's like, say, I'm on a trip, and I'm driving from New York to Florida, and I might stop at, you know, some of the rest areas, etc. But my destination is Florida. And likewise, anything we do now, it must be designed with a destination in mind. Otherwise, we're going to continue to do what we're doing, the lesser of the evils, or let's do this in the meantime. Let me give you an example. We have examples. Gaddafi created a system, and it is similar to the one I'm talking about, and it worked. It worked. So what? And Gaddafi didn't say, "I'm going to do something."
To stay within the borders of the United States, just for the minute. We don't know that Gaddafi's system worked.
We saw the results.
Wait a minute. Let me finish. We only know what was said. We have no definitive proof that this worked and that worked and the other worked. Therefore, the system is a good system. We don't know. I'm asking, how do we determine for ourselves, not watching anybody else's system, how do we, having come along a political trajectory for X number of years now, how do we develop something akin to what Dr. Barbara described yesterday?
We, first of all, you see, to a certain degree, he was also lost in the Trump thing too. But you see, you know what happened? A lot of times when we listen to the emotionalism in a speech. When I listen to a speech, I listen like a microscope, and I dissect it in every area. And that's what we need to do. And otherwise, we're going to keep going down that same old road of emotionalism, you know? And like I noticed...
Wait a minute. Are you suggesting I am emotional and
I didn't say you are emotional. I said when we listen to speeches...
I'm not emotional about it. It was a very emotional speech, and it did affect me. I said that. But that doesn't mean that I lost my mind.
No, what I said was not about you, Utrecht. My statement was not about you. I said we. I didn't say you. Don't take it personal.
I'm part of the we. You see, I'm one of the we. What we should do, I think, and what would really be helpful, is if people present an idea rather than a demand. This is an idea. This is...
Yeah, I'm presenting an idea. Yes, it's an idea.
Yes, an idea.
Yeah, it is an idea, but I am presenting it forcefully. It's just like when Fidel Castro came. Fidel Castro had an idea, but he wasn't plain about it. He presented it with force. You know, when Gaddafi and all these people say we're going to change the system, we come with force. We don't come like we're playing. You know, we don't come like we're just here to talk for the sake of talk. I'm serious about this. You know, when I present my idea, because I believe in my idea.
You have advantage of speaking about it, but not directly experiencing it. I have known many Cubans, very radical, who still had problems with the way the government was being run, who had major problems with some of the things that Castro did. They are not weak-kneed people at all. They are very rooted in leftist politics. And still, they had major criticisms, including of Gaddafi, of all of the strong leadership So it's not that they were perfect.
We might have
that they are to be emulated. We're looking at how do people in their own right, how do they fix a problem such as the problem we are having now?
The problem we are having now, we've been having it.
Yes, we've been having it. Okay. I'm not arguing with that. I'm still asking the same question.
And
what
as
is
I said,
the best way to go about challenging that?
And how we should challenge it, we should first of all define the mandate. And the mandate must be predicated on what is the true purpose of government. And therefore, if we have such a mandate, all the politicians we hire must, it's just like when you're going on a job and they interview you and they say, these are the requirements you must meet. And this is your job description. And we should have a mandate and have and give these politicians a job description. And if we gave them a job description, then we wouldn't have a Trump anymore, because they would know that they are here.
Do you realize that you're oversimplifying what government should be? Government
is not about
the people dictating what should happen. As
government
defined,
is the people.
As defined by the government here, as defined by the contract between government and the governed, it is a partnership. You're saying no. It is the people's
partnership, but government should function as servants. That's how the government should function.
All right. Talking apples and oranges. You were talking about the introduction or the radical change from the way things are now. I'm not talking
about it. It begins with education, educating the people. We must make the people understand what this is all about.
But you're hitting all the typical phrases and concepts.
No, it's not about
that have obtained in other places that also did not work. We're talking about democracy. What you're talking about is not democracy as people, not democracy as people have experienced it in the United States and want to continue experiencing it in the United States. We're not talking about essentially overthrowing a government. We're talking about how you fix this. It's not working. It's like saying your car is not working well, so the fix is to throw it out and get a new one. That's not what the discussion is. The discussion centers on what do you do to fix a thing that's not working according to long-held views and definitions and so forth. What do you do? What do we do now? Dr. Barber addressed it by saying, it's out of control. The government is seizing more and more power. The people have less and less. And the imbalance is so yawning that in and of itself it is a problem. How do we fix it? Your suggestion, if I understand you right, is throw everything out and start with this one, which is more ideal. Start with this prototype, which is more ideal. That's not what we're talking about. But we've come to the end of our program, and we can't talk anymore. We could talk tomorrow, but we can't overstay our time. Thank you all for putting very honest opinions on the table for our inspection and consideration, and doing so with the confidence that we respect everything that you have said. I thank you for that. and I'm very proud to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.